9 o'clock. In this next segment ahead, we are happy to be talking with a guest from the Adventist Hospital System, and he is joining us now via telephone. Dr. John Kirk is our guest in this segment. Doctor, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Barry, for having me.
You bet. You are, if I'm not mistaken, an OBGYN. Is that correct?
It is, in fact, the case. I deliver babies, and we do surgery on women and take care of them for their annual needs.
Very good. So with our focus, of course, on coronavirus and COVID-19, this is a category I really haven't seen much news coverage on or had any conversations with anyone. And that category, obviously, is what might be different about prenatal healthcare routine for pregnant moms, how this could be impacting pregnant women and infant babies. Is there anything unique or special about this coronavirus pandemic that is different from other infectious disease issues around pregnancy?
Well, I think it's quite amazing, as you've been talking about it daily, and we've been appreciating your information and keeping us up to date. Pregnant women are sort of a at-risk group when we talk about most infectious disease processes. And the reason for that is that pregnant women in general have decreased immunity in a sort of a necessary process to prevent them from trying to reject the baby. A baby is not them. It's a foreign entity, if you will, inside of them, and it could be perceived by the body's immune system as an invader, so to speak. And so the immune system is in fact, decreased. Its intense responses are significantly muted, and that puts them at risk for certain types of diseases, say, for example, the common influenza or flu. Women may have a 6-time or 600% increased risk of dying or having severe morbidity from the flu, which is another reason to get the vaccine. That's a whole other discussion, of course. In terms of specifically the COVID virus, we may be a little bit lucky in terms of pregnant women. I have to caveat this. The final answers of these towards these questions are certainly not completed. They are a work in process. But it does not seem as though women are catching the disease, COVID-19 or the coronavirus, or so to speak, SARS-CoV-2, its official name. They're not catching it any worse than anyone else, but they're not necessarily any better off. It's not as though they're protected necessarily. However, when they get it, they're not doing worse either. They're not having those same negative outcomes, which is a true blessing if we can see that in this challenge that we're facing. They don't seem to have any significant problems passing the infection to the baby, which is something, as you may recall, we saw with the Zika virus. That was very dangerous for the babies. It's not clear at all at this point whether it even passes to the baby. So some good news on the front for pregnant women, but again, more will be revealed.
Yeah, and it's certainly one of the more challenging aspects of this whole crisis is the inability to know everything we want to know when it's really just not yet knowable. I'm sure that's even more profound in your profession and as a doctor, because you want to help people, but you don't understand this particular virus completely yet, right?
That's true. We have some experience with coronaviruses in general. They've been around probably for hundreds, if not thousands of years, but we identified them in 1937. So they've been haunting us in one way or another for many, many years. The reality is coronaviruses cause perhaps most of the common colds that we have. Many of us have symptoms now, and we're obviously very worried that it could be the coronavirus or COVID-19 disease. It may, in fact, be the coronavirus. It's not uncommon at all. However, they're mild. We've developed immunities to them, so we protect mostly against any severe effects. However, we hadn't seen this particular version of the coronavirus so-called COVID-19 disease prior to it coming out in the Wuhan province in China, sometime in probably November or December. And so we don't have any immunity to fight it. And we, while we understand coronaviruses, and fortunately the Chinese were able to sequence the genome fairly quickly, the genome meaning the RNA/DNA that is the component of the virus, that allows us to then study it more thoroughly. What is it doing? How is it working? What kind of proteins is it making that allows it to persist, to survive, to attach itself to various surfaces that we keep talking about, how long various things, surfaces will allow the coronavirus to survive. Those things we're learning day by day, for example.
Let's talk a little bit about the breastfeeding side of this. Clearly, the pregnant woman makes it through the pregnancy and the delivery without concerns about the virus. But now you have both yourself and the baby and the questions that might arise around breastfeeding. Is it still safe for women to be breastfeeding? Are there any issues there?
I think the answer to that, the simple answer to that is yes, with, again, caveats. Of course, if the patient herself is infected with COVID-19 disease and the coronavirus, then she will need to be separated from her infant. Just like we are now in sheltering in place, and those of us who are infected need to be sheltered in place in a separate room from the other members of the family, she would need to be separated from her baby. Still could have breast milk. As far as we can see so far, there's been no reports, no evidence for breast milk being tainted with coronavirus. This is commonly the case with viruses. Many women with viruses, including HIV, hepatitis, certain hepatitis, are able to breastfeed. That is not necessarily true, say, for example, with Zika, but most viruses don't seem to permeate, and this one does not seem to be different into the breast milk. So that's great news. Certainly pumping the breast milk in an infected patient is an option, and then feeding it through a bottle. It's probably still better than just using formula from what we're learning, as we've not seen cases from transfer. It is, of course, difficult, as you can imagine, to ascertain, did it come through the placenta? Did it come through the breast milk? Or did it simply come through the exposure to an infected person when we are talking about when a baby, for example, gets the disease? So it is difficult to track it, but so far we have not been able to see any evidence of that. So that's good news.
Very good news indeed. What do we understand at this point about this particular coronavirus and children? Initially, the reports came out that this did not seem to be contagious for kids themselves. The kids were not developing the disease, might be carrying it, but children were not getting it. More recently, we've heard of a couple of cases. There was one death of a teenager in the L.A. area, and I believe I just saw within the last 24 hours is something about an infant, like a newborn, on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Speak to that a little bit. What's your understanding of this virus in children?
So initially, the reports from China suggested that it wasn't infecting or was bypassing largely children. That does not seem to be the case. A caveat on that. I don't know what we can trust that's coming out of China. No offense to our Chinese comrades, but the data is very questionable, and there's increasing information suggesting, which makes sense when you think about the volumes of population, et cetera, that the numbers just aren't real either. But those were the original reports, that children weren't being affected. Come full circle here now to day 14 of our shelter in place, and currently, you know, something along 5,147 deaths reported at the latest information this morning, a few minutes ago, and 217,000 confirmed cases. It definitely affects children. It affects everybody, but it doesn't seem to be as intense in the sense of lives lost, et cetera. That is obviously good news. Now, to your point, yes, a teen in Los Angeles did pass, a baby in Florida recently, an infant did pass. It's not entirely clear when that infant got the disease. The suggestion is within the first few days of life rather than a transmission through the placenta, though I'm not certain that they have absolutely ruled that out on that case. There was also one case in China out of 10 that was suggested to have been passed through the what's called vertical transmission from mom to baby, and that did not pan out, or has not panned out absolutely yet, although there's more studies going on. In terms of the, you know, the mortality rate, clearly children, infants, teens, et cetera, are not passing at any extensive percentage compared to other age groups, of course. But it is, you know, sobering when we hear these stories of you know, a brand new life lost from anything, let alone the COVID-19 disease.
Yeah. We're talking here with Dr. John Kirk. He is an OBGYN. He has patients in St. Helena and Napa in the Adventist Health System. And worries and concerns that new parents would have during the pregnancy and getting through delivery in this particular time, then you have the situation where you have a newborn baby. The family wants to be with the baby. You may want to show the baby off, but even in a normal time, there are concerns about disease around newborns. So what are you talking to your pregnant families about right now after the baby comes?
Well, I think the most important thing is that, you know, we're a team of providers, the obstetrician, the midwife, the pediatrician. We all are working together, the family practice doctor, internal medicine. We all work together to try to come to a safe approach to keep our the spread of the disease at a minimum. In terms of babies and moms, I don't think there's anything significantly different advice-wise that they should receive, you know, notwithstanding the breastfeeding issue that we just talked about for an infected mother, than any other group. So those things are what we've been hearing, you know, the 20 seconds of washing your hands and doing that frequently, minimizing the distance, or maximizing the distance between people, so-called social distancing. Going to be a whole new, there's a whole new set of memes coming around with social distancing that's kind of humorous, but the reality is there's value to that. The disease itself spreads primarily, not exclusively, but primarily by respiratory droplets when someone sneezes or coughs. Even when we speak, we spit. We don't realize it not necessarily all the time. Some of us do, maybe more than others, but we do. And those droplets that come out contain, if you're infected, significant volumes of this the coronavirus or COVID-19 disease causing agent. And they can even float around for a period of time. But the primary way that we get the infection is through inhaling or literally getting access into our mucous membranes, meaning our mouths, our noses, our eyes, of these droplets. Theoretically, we can touch a surface that has been previously touched by an infected person. Perhaps they cough into their hand, and that's another point. Cough into your shoulder. Don't cough into your hand ever if you can. You know, avoid shaking hands, clearly. Avoid, you know, keeping 6 feet, 6 inches apart, so-called 3 meters. We call it 6 feet, but it started as a 3-meter thing, so a little bit more than that is beneficial. There's articles that say, well, this thing can travel 27 feet with a very pronounced sneeze, for example. While that may be true in certain studies, it's not been shown that that's necessarily infectious in and of itself. So we're not saying go to 27 feet, but hey, 27 feet's probably better at the end of the day, mm-hmm. but it does make it difficult. So it's really separating those of us who are sick from those of us who are not. And when we don't know it, as you may have seen today, some more data came out that up to about three days is where we would expect the symptoms to start. So those asymptomatic shedders, those people who can infect somebody else, for the first 3 days of this disease, we have no idea. So that accentuates the importance of keeping moms and babies and any of us separated from each other to the greatest extent we can. Now, mom having the baby, having no symptoms, and having the baby with her, we're not saying keep your baby 6 feet away from you if there's no evidence, no suggestions that you have been infected, and almost certainly your baby hasn't been infected or exposed if you haven't brought it around the family member. So then in full circle, I think, you know, things like Zoom and FaceTime and Skype are probably experiencing a significant enhancement, and that's the way to share your baby with your family for now.
Dr. John Kirk, some advice for pregnant moms and dads and pairs of moms and pairs of dads, whoever they might be, and infants on the way, and the world keeps turning. And, of course, babies have been born through the 1918 pandemic and through all these other crises that we've talked about in terms of public health. In a general sense, final little segment of content here, the whole questions about equipment, about the personal protective equipment, supplies, and so forth. Where are you on that spectrum of concern?
Well, clearly we do not have enough what we call PPE, personal protective equipment, for the surge, as this is being called. And towards that end, we expect a surge. It's been predicted as of this morning that the maximum volume of infectious process in this country should be on April 15th, ironically, our original tax day, a little bit more pain. At that point, the maximum number of disease will have affected America. That's the projections based on analyzing the curves, because these viral infections typically follow fairly standard logarithmic curves. Once that happens, and as of the next day, we will probably have an estimated 2,644 deaths on that day individually. That actually will be the number one killer of in America on that day. Currently, it's the number three killer in America. And at the end of the day, that's sobering. But we are working very hard. I think we're in a very ingenious country in the sense of our ability to transform, and we are working with other corporations to create the respirators that we need. There's clearly going to be a shortage of many of these items. We are coming up with some creative solutions. There are people sewing things, et cetera, but the reality is this is a test for our healthcare system, and I would not say that we're failing, but I think it shows some of the weaknesses that we have. Some of the challenges that we have in the world's most expensive and most extravagant healthcare system. That being said, we're facing the challenge as best as we can. I think despite politics and all of the rest of it, I think the same people among us, Barry, you included, are speaking good truths and trying to make some good progress with this.
All right. Good place to wrap it up. Thanks for your time today, Dr. John Kirk, OBGYN, and the Adventist Healthcare System, patients in St. Helena and Napa Valley areas. Thanks for your time and your expertise, and hang in there. We know you're on the front line, and we respect your work.
I so much appreciate it, Barry. You have a blessed day. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye now.